Okay, warriors, you are listening to Unqualified Therapists. Remember, stay wild and weird.
Hey, warriors, this is Amy.
And I'm Sarah. We started this podcast because mental health is complicated and the stigma surrounding it can make us feel alone.
So we are here to share authentic stories in order to normalize and prioritize mental health.
We believe in professional therapy. We both use it on our own healing journeys.
But we also know it isn't one size fits all. So we are here to provide tools from our own experiences,
as well as those from our guests and professionals that come on the show.
Thank you for being here as we navigate the complexities of mental health and mental illness together.
Remember, hold on, warriors. We're gonna make it. Warrior.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Unqualified Therapist.
This week, y'all, you are in for a treat because we are talking about the most requested thing that we've had come through our inbox and DMs and surveys and polls that we've done, and that is workplace conflict. How the hell do we talk to the people that intimidate us or just generally make us feel uncomfortable?
Those are the people you have to be around every day, even if you don't want to. So we brought back our friend Jessie. Jessie and I have been friends for almost 25 years. You might remember her from episode 49, where we talk about the aftermath of my husband's death. And she's just been kind of a friend forever, but I look up to her so much in lots of ways, but this way particular, her communication style, the way that she handles situations and people, it is definitely something that I learn from every day. And I'm just so excited to share that information with you, share her knowledge. So we had her on today, and I think you guys are in for a treat.
Jessie comes to us with decades of experience in a professional corporate setting, so you are definitely going to get some helpful tips and real actionable things that you can do starting today.
Here's our conversation with Jessie on conflict resolution in the workplace.
Hi, Jessie. Welcome back.
Hello. It's great to be here.
We're laughing because we just had a little shit show of a how do we jump into this.
We are so happy you're here, for real though, because you're the queen of all things communication.
I hope I'm at least the princess of all things communication. maybe on my way to being the queen. We'll see.
So we've had some questions from our listeners about conflict and how to resolve it, how to stand up for yourself, how to be respectful about it. And so that's why we have Jessie here today, because that's who I ask these questions to. So I thought I would share the wealth and let you hear from her. So I'll just jump in. So the first question is, let's say that you have an issue with someone at work, and perhaps they're just not very nice to you. Maybe they're actually like really mean in a way though that like they can't actually get in trouble for, but you're like, God, why do you have to be such an asshole?
So, like, passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Excluding you and...
Exactly.
Those kinds of things. Sure. So, I think we've all been in therapy. We've all had challenging relationships. You know, doing work on yourself is really, like, the beginning of all of this, right? So, you know, when I walk in a room, ready to engage with the people in the room. I feel like I have great ideas and I feel like I have something to say. I feel like maybe I can help. And so I really believe in myself and the work that I do. And so when I walk in the room, you know, I'm generally in a good mood, happy to be there, ready to contribute. I think you have to sometimes do a lot of work on yourself to get to that point. And that doesn't mean every day I feel like that. Sometimes I have a bad day and then I call Amy and complain about it. But I think that it starts with like feeling good about yourself. Because when you believe in yourself and you respect yourself, you're not going to put up with any of this nonsense from other people. If you walk in the room and feel like crap, that's work that has to be done in a different way. I can give you some pithy things to say and ways to address people's passive aggressiveness, but it's not really ultimately going to change anything for you. So I just want to say, do the work. We all have to do the work. We all have to, you know, I know you guys use the language like your healing journey, which I think is great. And we're all on a healing journey. We've all had trauma. We've all had to overcome things, and kind of where you are in that journey is going to influence how these interactions go more than just about anything else. So let's say you're doing the work and you are, you know, ready to walk into that room. I think it's good to give yourself a little pep talk before you walk into the room and say, I belong in this room as much as anybody else. If it's a really intimidating environment, if it's really something that you're nervous about, I like to think, I'm going to walk in that room and I'm going to own that room.
Yeah.
There are things that you can kind of do to imagine, you know, imagine the four corners of the room and you're just kind of like decide like this is my territory. I think things like that can just get you a little bit of that boost of confidence when you need it. So you're coming in strong. Now somebody says something to you or, you know, does something that's really frustrating. I usually ignore it at first. I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to just jump to conclusions and make the assumption that they don't like me or, you know, that they have something against me. Sometimes somebody's just having a bad day. And I think the ability to overlook something usually serves us well, because a lot of times our assumptions and inferences are not right. We think that person's being a jerk to us, but they're, you know, favorite aunt just died this morning. That kind of thing has happened to me a lot. And I've always felt really bad. And so I try not to make those assumptions. But if someone's behavior has over and over clearly been intended to cut you down, minimize your contributions, I think that it's important to look for ways that you can call that out. So we're in the room and this person, you know, has said like three negative things about your contributions. They don't like any of the ideas that you've said. I will say something like, you have a lot of opinions about my ideas today. I'm really interested in what alternative solutions you have to this problem. And just like put that spotlight right on them. And that, I think that has like never not worked, because not only does it call out their bad behavior, it also like makes them realize how negative they're being. And it kind of shows other people in the room like, yeah, what's up with that? So the attention then is on them. There are other things you can do, like a kinder thing to do if you're feeling really generous. And you can either do this in a like, I mean it way, or in an ultra patronizing way. Like, are you okay?
Yes.
And I've heard that recently. Yeah.
And you can do it like both ways. And sometimes I genuinely mean it. If someone that I really like and respect is acting like a jerk, I will say that and mean it. Like, time out. What is up with you? Like, do we need to take a moment? Is something going on? If it's someone that I have repeatedly had negative experiences with, I might do it in a little bit more of a patronizing tone. So that's something that you can do that I think really kind of just puts it on the table. Like, you're saying it without saying it. Like, okay, you're being a jerk. Explain yourself.
Yeah, I used that today at work. Actually, when I was explaining something to someone, they weren't either paying attention to me or just had no interest. There was a very obvious negativity from there. And I said, are you okay?
just asked. And then it was like they stopped doing the other thing that they were doing and started paying attention to what I was saying. And yeah, it works.
It's very useful in that your tone can really change the meaning of it. So it's a handy one. You only have to remember one thing. Are you okay? You can probably say that in five different ways to get a point across.
Right. That's excellent for somebody who's generally being an asshole. And I love that you're saying, like, let's do the work first and figure it out. What about different conversation styles? So there are just people who speak very differently than you. Or, you know, so I generally have this, and Amy makes fun of me for it, like my, quote, professional voice, which is like very happy. And I'm always wanting to convey that, like, I appreciate your time and I am like thankful that you're talking to me. Like, I am always trying to convey that to people, and that's not how everybody talks. And so when people don't convey that same way back to me, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, do they hate me? Like, why are they not responding in the way that I'm talking? Why aren't they as happy as I am? And so when you have somebody who just communicates completely differently than you, and you want to kind of get that verification back. So not necessarily that they're being, but you want to understand, are you upset with me? Or is this a difference in style of communication?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. I think that, you know, it kind of brings me to a topic that I really love. And lately I've been saying it's like the answer to everything. So I'm a big fan of personality assessments. I love many different frameworks. It is the thing that I will probably go back for a PhD for. I have some really exciting thoughts about what can be studied around this stuff. So I am a huge fan of the Enneagram. And for those who are new to the Enneagram, it is a personality assessment and then like a framework that introduces 9 different types. And I will probably insist on coming back on this podcast to talk your ear off about the Enneagram, because I really do think for people who are interested in learning about themselves and how to best interact with others, it's the best tool. But you can take any of the frameworks. So there's the DISC profile, there's Strength Finders, there's Myers-Briggs. There are lots of different ones that you can engage with. And the purpose of all of them is to help us understand that we are different from each other and it's not better or worse. So if you're the easiest one to understand is like an introvert versus an extrovert, right? If you're young and not particularly self-aware, maybe an extrovert, and you might think that introverts are just weird. Like, you don't get it. Like, you love meeting new people. You want to talk to everybody. Like, why wouldn't you love to walk into a party of strangers and just walk up to them and start talking to them? Obviously, you know, if you do a little bit of work on this stuff, you can see that there's great value in introverts, just like there's great value in extroverts. And there's lots of different elements that you can be like A or B. So introvert or extrovert. You're more of a thinker, more of a feeler. Are you spontaneous or are you a planner? And none of those things are like a right and wrong. They're just different. And it helps us to learn about these differences, because then we stop making assumptions and we start giving people more of that benefit of the doubt that I was talking about earlier. So Sarah, you used an example of like, you know, I'm kind of coming to this conversation with a particular energy and this person that I'm talking to is not matching my energy. And most of the time, most people do, at least to a degree, match the person they're talking to's energy. But some people are not that way. And they are just the way that they are and are not necessarily reacting to anything that you're doing or reacting to who you are. They may or may not like you. And so that goes back again to kind of that doing the work and being like, I'm going to be just fine standing here and experiencing this awkward moment. And actually, it's kind of funny that I'm like smiling like the Joker and being kind of loud. And this person is just staring at me with this flat affect and like, you know, no tonality to their voice. I mean, that's how I try to think of those situations. Like, this is going to be a hilarious story to tell later. That is kind of my coping mechanism for awkwardness. But I think that there's such a great and simple mantra, which is, it's not about you. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it isn't. And even, you know, with those situations of where you have people who can be kind of catty or kind of bitchy, that says so much more about them than it says anything about you. And so when I'm experiencing that, I have kind of trained myself to the point of just like immediately recognizing it, like, whoa, what is wrong with, you know, this person? Are they having a terrible day? Are they always like this? I don't like own it. Like, I don't say I must have done something wrong. This is, you know, my fault. They don't like me. I have days where that happens, but it's pretty rare because this is the work that I have done. And so I think it's not making assumptions, not making inferences. When we speculate, we're usually wrong. I don't know if you've noticed that, but when I speculate, I'm usually wrong. And I used to spend a lot of time speculating. And what a waste of time. So I try not to do that.
Yeah. I think that's how I've gotten to this point, is because of all that speculation I did early on in life, where I was like, this person doesn't like me and whatever. And then when I find out, you know, oh, either that's just their personality, that's how they are, or something, like you said, something has happened in their life that's causing them to, you know, behave this way in this time. Then I was like, okay, I need to stop making those assumptions right off the bat. And just start, you know, realizing we're all different.
And I think there's a fine line between not making assumptions, but also trusting your gut, right? Because it's both. And it sounds a little contradictory. Like, if my gut tells me, like, this person really does not like me, and I've felt it over and over, I don't want to make an assumption about why that is. But I do trust that, like, something is up. And I may decide to ignore it because I genuinely don't care. Like, I can get through the interactions with this person. And if they want to be weird, that's fine. But if I feel that it's a relationship that's essential to me working well, if I know it's going to be a barrier, I will choose to have a conversation with that person. And I think that kind of, you know, moves to a topic that's, you know, really important, which is, you know, what do you do when something's up? Like, what do you do when there's that vibe? And I want to talk about it. So I am really direct. I say exactly what I want. I say exactly what I think. I am too direct for some people. Sometimes I care about that, because the impact that I'm making isn't what I want it to be. But sometimes I don't care. Just because someone is uncomfortable with my directness does not necessarily mean it's a problem for me. There are times when I want to soften that. There are times when I want to adjust that because it's important to build a relationship with this person. And I can tell that approach is not going to work. But what I really don't like about a lot of office culture is when something happens that's uncomfortable, or that you don't like, or you don't like a person, or they said something, you know, offensive, what do people usually do?
Tattle.
Tattle is one of the very biggest ones. Tattle or gossip?
Tattle
or they gossip. And I think we're all tempted to do that at different times. And, you know, there is a time to go to your supervisor. There is a time to, you know, go to the bathroom with your work friend and, you know, vent about it for 2 minutes. But mostly, should we not just have a conversation? I can have a conversation. I will not get upset. I will not scream and yell. I will not allow it to escalate. So I know I'm okay to have it. I don't know if other people are afraid that it will escalate. I think people are not raised to engage in healthy conflict. You know, with my 13-year-old daughter, since she could talk, I've insisted that we have it out. And she's 13 now, so you can imagine we have it out a whole bunch. And I'm teaching her, I'm training her. This is how you do it. You don't just storm off to your room and slam the door and don't talk for 3 days and then act like nothing happened. You don't just scream and yell for 5 minutes and then act like nothing happened. We do not do that. we talk about it. Sometimes we need a moment in our family. We can say, I need a minute. I gotta cool down. And that is always acceptable. But we will come back and talk about it. And it's hard. It's exhausting. It's always at the most inconvenient time. It's like I'm draining the pasta for dinner and here it comes. And I'm like, I am literally going to stand here for 30 minutes now. And I know that's what it's going to take. But I'm doing that so that in 20 years, when she walks into an office, when she has to lead her team to do something, she knows how to do it. It's not this crazy, weird, scary, unknown thing, because I am right now sitting at tables with adults that think a disagreement is a scary, unknown thing. And that is a tragedy. People say it's not polite to talk about politics or religion. And, you know, in this climate, it is very hard to engage in that if you don't 100% agree with someone. But it's part of the reason why we're in this situation in the first place, because we have not been raised to, trained to, encouraged to have conversations with people who disagree with us. And so our country is very divided into two camps of people, and we only spend time with people we agree with because it's getting harder and harder to tolerate relationships with people we disagree with. And I think we would never have gotten this far politically if at home and in our social circles, if we engaged in these healthy debates without it having to be friendship ending or relationship ending.
So when you do this, when you say, so let's talk, like, what's going on? Is there something going on? And they're like, no, nothing. And clearly that's not true.
Yep. So that happens. That happens all the time. One thing that I think is important to understand is that some people will never come around. Some people will never engage with you. Some people never, ever, ever will do it. But you will still know that you made a good effort. And what you want to come out of the conversation with is some agreements. And they're going to agree to it. They're probably not really going to do it. But you know that they agreed to it. So that's something that I have found to be helpful. Because this is not usually something that you can snap your fingers and fix unless you have two highly emotionally intelligent people having a conversation. It's like, you know, it's almost like soulmates. Like you find someone, you're like, wait, you can have a hard conversation and we can resolve it and then we'll be like friends afterwards. It really is really exciting when you find someone like that, because it's not typical. Most of the time, you know, if you are someone who is serious about emotional intelligence, you are serious about conflict resolution, you can see other people like that really easily. And you can also see who is not that way. But let's say you're talking to someone who's not that way, and you can tell they're very uncomfortable. They don't want to have this conversation. So for me, because I am so direct, I know that I have to turn that dial way down. I have to try to be a lot softer. There are some actual physical things that you can do that help. You don't want to be standing over someone trying to have this conversation. So if they're sitting down, you want to sit down too. You want to give them enough space. Some people need a lot of space and feel really crowded if you're sitting close to them. You don't want to make like constant direct eye contact with them. Some people find that intimidating. Just, you know, being aware of some things like that. I think starting out like this is always really, really good. Can I ask you a question? When you do that, it lowers the person's defenses because they are giving you permission. And I've never had someone say no. So people are far too curious about what I'm going to say no, but they're also giving me permission. And so when they give me that permission, whether they intended to or not, their defenses are lowered. So now I have permission and I'm only asking a question. I'm not going to say like, you're an idiot and I don't want to ever talk to you again. I'm just going to ask them, you know, I sense that there is some tension between us. And I wanted to know if you agree. Do you feel that too? So it's very neutral. I'm not blaming them. As soon as you start blaming someone, it's over. It's over. I work very hard to not blame people. Now, there may be a point in a conversation like this where I request that they take some responsibility. And if the conversation goes well, usually they will. I also have to be very quick to take responsibility for the things that I have done that maybe aren't the greatest. Because even though I'm pretty good at this stuff, I occasionally will roll my eyes. I occasionally will say something that's not the nicest. And I can take responsibility for those things. Some people feel like it costs them greatly to admit fault or apologize. It doesn't cost me anything. I don't feel that it's difficult to part ways with my pride or something. Like I just have decided that that is not going to be a difficult thing for me. I will apologize. If I was wrong, I will be the first to say it. That is both a kindness as well as a power move. So you are both being kind as well as you are confident enough to admit when you're wrong. So I think setting the stage physically so they're as comfortable as possible, start with a question. Ask if they agree with the tension. Okay, so let's say they're, you know, stonewalling you. They're not going to give. They're not, even if you admit, hey, listen, you know, I feel like I might be partly responsible for this. I said this one day and it seemed like maybe it bothered you. And I want to apologize for that. And they'll say like, yeah, okay, that bothered me. But they're not like, they're not really giving you, like, they're not really being vulnerable. And that's really what it is. I'm sensing if they're going to be vulnerable with me. I'm already going to be, I'm going to set the example. I'm going to be vulnerable. They may or may not. If they do, it's usually going to go really well. If they don't, okay, and I had this happen not long ago with someone. I could tell that they weren't really going to get into it with me. They did not really want to talk about it. So what I asked them was, how about this? How about if in the future, you know, if there's something that I say or that I do that bothers you, would you be willing to agree to come and have a conversation with me about it? That's all I'm asking. Because,
that's good.
Because I
that's
think,
really good.
Because I think that we can probably work it out. You're smart. Yeah. I'm smart. We both care about working here. Why wouldn't we want to work it out? So I'm telling you that if you come to me, I will give you my time. I will give you my attention so we can work it out. And nobody is not going to agree to that. Will they actually do it? Not always. But it is a good thing to ask someone to agree to. You're making a request that they agree to do that. So now when they don't do that and when they tattle or gossip, at least you know that you gave them an alternative and they are very intentionally choosing not to speak with you. And to me, that is all on them. I have done everything I can. And if they want to be mad, I really don't care because I have made myself available. I have done the things that I know how to do.
You bring up such a great point too, talking about apologizing and it being a power move. I 1000% agree with that. I realized in like high school, I think it was, when I was having an argument with a friend and they owned up and apologized for something they did. And I instantly, my point of view of that person completely switched and I grew this whole new level of respect. And I was like, this is a good person that can sit here and own up and say they are sorry for what they have, you know, done or how I'm feeling about something. And I decided at that point that that's what I was going to do going forward as well. My relationships are a lot stronger. I apologize to my children so that my children know that it is okay and it is an acceptable thing and an encouraged thing to do to apologize for your mistakes.
Totally.
And to own it when you have done something that you know you shouldn't have or that you feel sorry for. Or that, you know, if you know that you have hurt someone and if it's something that you didn't intend to do, but still that person has feelings towards that action, you need to apologize for, you know, unintentionally, whether it's unintentional or not. And I think that's a big part of it too, where it's like, well, I didn't mean to, because that was, you know,
and that's where the gaslighting comes in.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm sorry I made you feel that way.
Oh. What?
So that's the difference between, and this is a good thing to say to someone that does that. It works. It's a little hard for kids. I have explained this to my daughter many times, and I think that she gets it. I probably started explaining this to her when she was too little to understand what on earth I was talking about. But it's the difference between intent versus impact. So when you, when you put that on the table, here's what you're doing. So, okay, somebody's like, well, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. And you say, okay, listen, there's a big difference between intent and impact. I can see that your intention was not to do that. But would you be willing to consider taking some responsibility for the impact what you said had on me? Because the way it made me feel is disrespected. It made me feel embarrassed. It made me feel confused. And I want you to care enough about this relationship to at least consider next time, maybe you could say that a little bit differently.
It's like a boom mic drop.
Boom.
That is really good. When it's your superior, when it's your boss. So when it's someone who has that sort of power over you, is it different?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it probably is.
Yep.
And how you manage that situation, if they are either being disrespectful or maybe passive aggressive or not giving you really the credit that credit's due, or how do you handle that? Because that's just a little bit of a different dynamic than a coworker.
It is. And so, you know, my personality type, I'm kind of in this mode anyway, which is I only care what you think if I love you, respect you, or you have power over me. That's it. Anybody else, I really, like, I could not muster up one little, you know what, to give.
What number are you?
I'm an 8.
You're an 8?
On
okay.
the Enneagram.
I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, I'm such an 8. I'm 7 wing, which makes me seem friendlier than maybe I really am. we can talk about that in our upcoming Enneagram episode. But yes, the stakes are higher for me in any of those three categories. If you have power over me, if I love you or I respect you. So, with a boss, I have had some bosses with some very strong personalities. I have had bosses who are demanding. I have had bosses who are tough to please. And I think that I am actually very good at working for someone who's sort of a hard ass, because I know what it feels like, because I probably would be more that way if it didn't hurt people's feelings so much. and so I get why they are demanding, and I get why they are, but I can kind of help to be a little bit of a translator. One time at a job that I had, let's pretend that my boss's name was Bill. Someone came up to me, and he had started working for the organization a couple months before, and he came up to me, he goes, I hear you speak Bill, meaning like I could translate what something meant. And it was so funny.
That's
like
great.
The comment itself was so funny, but what was even funnier was he said, well, this is what he said. And he told me these like couple sentences. I think he may have even read an email to me, and it was utter nonsense, but I knew exactly what it meant. So I think that I have learned how to kind of take a lot of like getting a little bit beat up, but the trade-off is someone like me can take that. And when the moment comes to stand up to that person, because it's important, because, you know, this is not right, like I can do it, but I'm not going to do it every day. And so I think with a boss, it's partly about choosing your battles. I think that you have to look for the good. Every boss I've had, I've liked better after I left. And part of the reason is because it's sort of like how, you know, we look at George W. Bush now, like, aw.
Isn't he sweet?
Isn't he so cute, right?
Look, he paints.
Yeah, right, exactly. And like, you know, I was like marching in Seattle about the war in Iraq. So, there, you know, time is a friend in that way. But, you know, you look back and you can see what they taught you and what you learned from them. And I guess I would say, you know, look for the good, like do the work to look for the good and try to see, you know, this person is really tough about some of these things, but here's what I do have. Either I have their respect, you know, at least they're flexible with me, you know, whatever the things are that make you appreciate them at all. Remember to be appreciative of those. But I definitely think that there are occasions where you ask to have a conversation. And I would say that, you know, if they're taking your ideas, if they're talking over you, if they're disrespecting you, you know, whatever it might be, I think you bring it up when you're not mad. You like wait till your next supervision. It's like a scheduled time already. You know, you're not firing off an email. I need to speak with you immediately. You know, don't do anything like that. Wait until your next meeting. And then, you know, you just say to this person like, hey, I've noticed that there have been like a couple of specific occasions where I've noticed that, you know, you talk over me and it's my area of expertise because I'm not going to be yapping for nothing. So if I'm talking, I've thought about it and I'm probably really well versed in the topic. So I'd really love a chance to contribute in these meetings. And I just wanted to, you know, make you aware of the observation and, you know, give you a chance to respond. And then they're almost for sure going to be like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm so sorry. And probably feel a little bit like they should have realized that themselves. But I think you do it kindly. I think you, you know, maybe with a boss have like a tiny bit of an apologetic, you know, tone. Like, I hate to have to point this out, but I'm going to.
That's good.
I like one of the words you used in that was a couple of specific incidences. And I think when you're speaking with people, especially those in power above you, are to be able to give specifics.
Yeah.
So instead of saying something like, you make me feel stupid.
Yeah, that won't get you anywhere because it's not right. Actionable. Like, I think that's exactly. what it is, is like, make it easy for people to be better. You know, here is what you can do about this. Like that time when you talked over me in that meeting, I would have loved to have finished my thought.
Yes. Jesse, these are amazing tips. We are so thankful for you having all of this knowledge. Girl, you got it.
I've had to fight for it. This has come from decades of conflict.
Decades and decades.
And criticism.
Yeah.
But I have learned.
I look up to you so much with that. There is hope for those of you out there who hate conflict, because Jesse and I have been friends for 25-ish years, and she has tried this with me even back in day one, and I was like, nothing's wrong. Meanwhile, I was like, I fucking hate you. Like, I'm so mad at you. And so we've come to this place now where, like, we can have this amazing discussion if there is something wrong. I guess what I'm telling everyone is there's a possibility for growth, even for those people who are like, hey, this is terrifying. Nothing's wrong. I'm fine. Everything's fine. And then you're dying inside.
So true.
Jesse, thank you so much for joining us. We will talk to you again very soon. So stay tuned, everybody, for our conversation around the Enneagram and some other personality test discussions.
It has been so great to spend a little bit of time with the two of you. I love your podcast, and I'll come back anytime.
Yay.
Woo-hoo.
Bye, Jess.
Bye.
So that information was incredibly helpful. I know that a lot of times when talking with people, especially people who are anxious, and somehow those people are always in my feed or my friends, they talk a lot about spending countless hours worrying about things they might have said or done to make somebody upset. So hopefully we can kind of take some of this information and try it out. You know, it's never really about us. And I think that's one of my favorite things that we talked about today that Jesse shared with us.
Yeah, me too. I also love the use of, and didn't even think about it as a conflict resolution tool, but the use of just asking someone, are you okay? And taking mm-hmm. that in a couple different levels, depending on the situation. But that was a really great piece of advice from her as well.
I agree. One of my favorite things that Jesse has actually taught me prior to this, but she told her secret to all of you, and I promise you, if you use it, because I've used it, it works. And it's, can I ask you a question? Every single time it works, and it's a great way to start a really difficult conversation.
We would love to hear your stories on how you've had some great results with conflict resolution. We'd also love to hear your conflict resolution fails.
Please. Yes, please.
And I think that would be a super fun listener tale show. So please feel free to write us at unqualifiedtherapists@gmail.com. You can also go to our website at unqualifiedtherapists.com and leave us a short voicemail. It only lets you do 2 minutes at a time. Or if you just want to come on the show, if you've got a real banger you want to share with us, we'd love to hear it.
Jesse doesn't believe in burning bridges. I tend to light fires everywhere I go. So if you want to share your story of that, I'm here for it. I love a good mic drop. So we love them all. And in all seriousness, that is for like 1% of the time. Most of the time you can handle it in other ways, but I tend to have had to have a lot of those 1% times.
We do tend to find ourselves in 1% situations.
Why?
I don't know.
I guess that's why we have a lot of stories.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm really excited about, Patreons, stay tuned. You're getting a special treat in your feed where we're going to share the stories of the people who ignored Jesse's advice and went on a burning rampage, leaving their work in a blaze of glory.
I hope you guys enjoy those stories. And again, we would really love it if you reached out and shared with us some of yours. It helps us to be connected with you and, you know, just form this community where we feel like we know who's listening and we know a little bit more about you. So really, even if you're like, oh, my story's not that good, we want to hear it. So send us a voicemail, write in. We cannot wait to hear from you.
Definitely.
And until then, stay wild.
And Weird Warriors, we love you.
This episode was brought to you by Sarah Simone and Amy Baumgartner. Theme song and other music provided by Epidemic Sound. All episodes are mixed, mastered, and produced by me, Sarah Simone. To help us keep making episodes just like this one, consider supporting us on patreon.com/unqualifiedtherapistsinc. Or share us with a friend, relative, coworker, hairstylist, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Sharing us not only helps keep the mics on, but it furthers our mission in removing the stigma. If you have a mental health journey you'd like to share, email us at unqualifiedtherapists@gmail.com or reach out to us on our website, www.unqualifiedtherapists.com. Until next time, hold on, warrior. We're gonna make it.